Quer saber de que forma a ciência e a tecnologia estão a alterar, melhorar ou até piorar as nossas vidas? Está no sítio certo. Hoje temos connosco Paddy Cosgrave, o cofundador e líder da Web Summit, para falar sobre o futuro dos eventos e, claro, o Collision, que decorre na próxima semana. Bem-vindos ao podcast do Dinheiro Vivo, Made in Tech.
Can you believe it? Can you realize that we, that all of us, have actually begun the exploration of another world?
Olá, eu sou João Tomé e neste 23º episódio do Made in Tech de 16 de abril de 2021, temos connosco Paddy Cosgrave. Além de ser cofundador e CEO da Web Summit, é uma pessoa que gosta muito de analisar a sociedade em que vivemos, a era tecnológica em que vivemos, e neste caso falámos com ele não só sobre a Web Summit, que em princípio vai decorrer de forma presencial em novembro, mas também falámos sobre o evento que vem já, começa já na próxima semana, Collision. Era suposto realizar-se no Canadá e, tal como o ano passado, por causa da pandemia, vai ser totalmente online. Foi precisamente o ano passado que a Web Summit, a empresa da Web Summit, começou a testar no Collision, em junho, a sua plataforma online, que foi criada em tempo recorde, em algumas semanas. Foi criada sobre a liderança de dois portugueses, engenheiros, João Soares e Tomé Duarte, e a verdade é que foi uma plataforma que conseguiu mostrar de alguma forma que é possível tentar imitar algumas coisas de um evento presencial online, especialmente através de uma ferramenta que tornou-se muito popular chamada Mingle, que nos permite colocar em contacto direto com qualquer pessoa que esteja na conferência, e na altura foram 32 mil pessoas, agora no Collision, que começa já na próxima semana, nesta terça-feira, dia 20, vão ser 40 mil, portanto permite falarmos durante 3 minutos com qualquer pessoa ao acaso, mais ou menos ao acaso, e permite de facto ter pequenas descobertas com essa ferramenta curiosa. A verdade é que depois, no geral, é uma conferência normal, tem algumas áreas para uma espécie de stands ou de salas de patrocinadores, por exemplo. Depois tem também os habituais oradores, estão divididos em canais. Já tivemos essa experiência também na Web Summit de dezembro, que foi totalmente online. Falámos com o Paddy Cosgrave não só sobre o evento que vem para a semana, que vai ter 100 startups portuguesas a participar, 80 delas mesmo no local, mas também sobre os objetivos dele para a Web Summit para o futuro, os objetivos que ele tem em relação a uma nova área empresarial relacionada com o licenciamento de tecnologia para eventos, não só a tecnologia que permite fazer eventos, mas também esta ferramenta de tornar os eventos remotos, portanto, que eles criaram o ano passado. Eles já licenciaram a ONU no final de março e agora vão criar uma empresa à parte da própria Web Summit. Falámos ainda de um dos sonhos que Paddy Cosgrave tem para a Web Summit e quer começar a realizá-lo já em novembro, que diz respeito à utilização das noites de uma forma diferente, as noites na cidade de Lisboa, neste caso, de uma forma diferente, como uma extensão curiosa da conferência, mas também os objetivos de tornar, a nível de futuro dos eventos, tornar este funcionamento de remoto uma ferramenta interessante para preparar melhor o evento presencial, que ele acha que é fundamental, antes ou mesmo depois da conferência. Portanto, escolhermos melhor a experiência que vamos ter presencial através de ferramentas remotas antes de partirmos para um evento presencial. Falamos também em realidade aumentada, no seu amor pela Apple. Ele fala várias vezes em Steve Jobs. Já no passado falámos com ele e ele de facto até tem uma história peculiar, mesmo a nível familiar, de paixão desde há umas décadas com a Apple e com Steve Jobs. Portanto, ele próprio segue algumas das teorias de Steve Jobs, a forma de gerir uma empresa e um produto. E, claro, falamos também aqui no facto dele ter uma empresa de investimentos, a Marantine, da qual a Hopen, que é uma plataforma de eventos remotos, curiosamente, a Hopen, que ele investiu no início do ano passado, ter disparado, desde que ele investiu, mais de 100 vezes o valor para o qual ele pagou, o qual ele investiu o ano passado. É talvez um dos maiores investimentos que ele fez na vida, garantidamente, porque a Open tem subido de interesse e, portanto, também de valor. Estão a tentar entrar também no mundo colaborativo, uma espécie de Slack, pode ser aqui uma rival de Slack, achei curioso essa parte também. Portanto, ele aposta muitas fichas nesse investimento que fez na Hopin, que ele não acha propriamente que seja um rival da Web Summit, porque tem a sua própria ferramenta diferente. Deixamos um pequeno bombom, eu diria, no final da conversa, não só porque vamos oferecer bilhetes para o Collision, o evento que era suposto então decorrer no Canadá e que será remoto. Vamos, portanto, oferecer 10 bilhetes. Podem saber como ganhar no final desta conversa. E depois também vamos colocar uma parte de uma conversa que tivemos em dezembro com Paddy Cosgrave, que eu acho curiosa e que pode ser ouvida num outro podcast que criámos em dezembro a propósito do Web Summit, chamado Inside Web Summit, que tem também entrevista com Paddy Cosgrave na altura e também tem algumas análises sobre a função, a importância da Web Summit para Portugal. Também temos aí depoimentos interessantes, incluindo de uma das pessoas que trouxe a Web Summit para Portugal, João Contri Figueiredo, o atual deputado da Iniciativa Liberal, que foi, na altura estava no Turismo de Portugal, de facto, foi um dos principais impulsionadores para a Web Summit vir para Portugal já há alguns anos. Também temos uma conversa com ele nesse podcast. Se quiserem procurar, está em Inside Web Summit, nas principais plataformas, ou então em dinheirovivo.pt. Está feita a introdução, um pouco longa, porque mais uma vez temos uma conversa em inglês, pelo qual pedimos desculpa, mas a verdade é que quando os convidados são interessantes, as conversas também podem ser em inglês. Portanto, sem mais demora, segue a conversa com Paddy Cosgrave. Welcome, Paddy Cosgrave. Where does this podcast find you? On the countryside,
I'm in
right?
Rural Ireland on the countryside in Donegal, where there was no coverage until a few days ago. I got a notification, so I decided to move to the countryside. And I arrived and there was 60 megabytes per second. And by day two, word has obviously spread because
everyone is using
it's
it.
Now down to 4 megabytes per second. So,
slow.
Yeah.
Let's dig in into Collision. It's next week. It's online again, second year, where you put to test your platform. What are the main differences from last year to Collision?
I think the biggest difference, there's a huge contingent of Portuguese participating. So there's more than 2,200 actually students through the Ministry for Science who are participating. There's more than 100 startups, actually, I think more than 100 startups.
From Portugal.
And yeah, from Portugal. So we've had a lot more time. I think the last time there was a high degree of uncertainty. Would we be able to pull it off? Would it work? And understandably, I think a lot of people, you know, said, okay, we'll watch from a distance and see what happens because we can't imagine how this would happen online. It turned out it went very well. And I think that helped massively for Web Summit. We were able to then build a lot of momentum. People could trust us, our partners could trust us, that we could, you know, in the absence of a real world event, you know, do I think online conferences are better than offline conferences? Absolutely not.
No.
But we build pretty good software that I think enables the best online conferences. And Collision this year, I think, will be the, you know, hopefully the best. We'll set a new standard in online conferences. Speakers have become more comfortable doing online conferences with us. And the lineup of speakers for Collision is pretty incredible.
Exactly.
Including some of Portugal's finest.
Any highlights you want to do about speakers?
I'm always careful, you know, because I'm dealing with all the speakers, never to pick favorites. But I mean, growing up as a kid, I supported Manchester United. Mm. It was kind of my team in the Premiership, and so, you know, it's quite interesting to, you know, to have David Beckham speak on an important subject. I think there are some very interesting politicians from the United States. There is more talk now than ever before on regulation, within tech, especially with regard to monopolies. So I think those discussions are becoming richer. They're also becoming more important because things are beginning to happen. I also think, because I'm Irish and I'm from Ireland, that discussions around corporate tax have always just been discussions for a number of years now. But suddenly, in the space, I would say, of literally weeks, it looks like we're going to have worldwide agreement. Why? Because for the first time, the United States and Europe are clearly on the same page. And I think that spells very likely significant change to corporation tax, which will stop, I would imagine, tens of billions over years, maybe even hundreds of billions over many years, leaving Portugal, leaving Spain, leaving France, leaving Germany, passing through Ireland, where Ireland would collect a tiny fraction of the total tax that should be taken, and then the money goes off to the Caribbean or somewhere like that. It looks like there's going to be worldwide agreement on stopping that. I don't think Ireland's going to be in agreement with it.
It won't. I read an article where they say Ireland could lose 5 billion euros, yes, of taxes because of it. So it won't be good.
I think so. Lots of other kind of serious repercussions. But Ireland might lose 5 billion, but Europe is going to get back 50, 60 billion, you know, maybe more. And you count that in terms of, let's say, just hospitals. I mean, it's, you know, it's like building, if you want to build an expensive hospital for 200 million, maybe there's been some more expensive hospitals built in Portugal. But I mean, that's literally like 300 hospitals built a year in Europe with that amount of money. It's an incredible amount of money, and it's about time that it happens.
We heard about it at Web Summit in December. Some talk about it, some hope that the Biden administration could be different, and there's an agreement, and now we're seeing it. I interviewed Rod Sims, which is the guy who created the Australian code that Facebook detests, really. And he has a whole big story about how he's trying to change the society that we're living by taxing big players, of course. In terms of more trends that you're seeing, of course, healthcare, tech and healthcare is also probably one of the areas that Collision will focus on. Do you have more topics of importance you want to highlight?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a range of areas. A lot of people will be talking about NFTs, non-fungible tokens. We're seeing an immediate effect. Maybe it's short-lived, maybe it's not. Hopefully we'll hear different opinions at Collision. In the art world, NFTs have become, you know, you could say they're an overnight hit, whether they're a long-term success story or not. You know, let's hear the different opinions. But NFTs could have broader application across other areas of entertainment, writing, maybe even journalism. So I think that's interesting. I think the other personal area that I find interesting is, are the trends that we've seen during the pandemic going to persist? So as Israel returns to normality, let's remember that nightclubs have been open in Israel since March 7th. The only two restrictions are 75% capacity of your license capacity and everybody needs to be vaccinated. But other than that, nightclubs have been back for nearly 6 weeks in Israel. Elsewhere in the world where there are really no restrictions, like in New Zealand, it's interesting to observe the trends. The trends clearly point to a rejection of online behavior and a movement towards group-based real-world activities. And you can see that looking at a number of observations. First of all, music festivals in New Zealand and Australia are hitting all-time records. Yeah. Why? Well, it turns out people being separated, even for a short period of time in those parts of the world, actually now want to get together in ever greater numbers than ever before. Secondly, the unit labor costs, so the cost of employing people in frontline hospitality services, that's restaurants, that's bars, that's cafes, has increased to a level above the pre-pandemic. What does that mean? Well, like in Israel, suddenly everybody wants to eat out. They just want to meet with friends. They want to socialize. The question
they want
is,
to compensate for what
they want
didn't
to compensate.
Have.
So the big question is, I'd say that's going to happen in Europe. It's going to be even greater because in Europe, the restrictions, I would argue, have probably been the tightest for the longest, unlike in Australia and New Zealand that only locked down severely, but for a short period of time.
It's the first, yeah.
Now, after the question is, does that persist for 6 months and then we find a new normal? And what is that new normal? And what are the implications for many of the startups that have raised huge amounts of money or they have huge valuations? You know, we're talking over Zoom. What happens to Zoom? People have begun to become a little bit subdued on the prospects for Zoom in the long term relative to their valuation. It's still an incredibly successful company. But what about online conference software and other platforms that need a shift in behavior very much to online first, and people are increasingly working remotely, etc. So I'm fascinated by what the various experts will have to say, and these discussions will be across many many panels. What does the world look like as we emerge from COVID? Indications, sorry to speak at length, from East Asia are that events and event-based or group-based activities, both small groups and large groups, have come back stronger than before before the pandemic.
Of
so
course.
You know.
Yeah. There's a lot of talk of the crazy 20s that 100 years were big and now probably will come back.
Bet is it's a good time to buy a restaurant if you were thinking of buying a restaurant. It was a bad 12 months to own a restaurant. Mm-hmm. A terrible time. I mean, you know, I feel so sorry for so many small businesses that have probably gone out of business. But if you're to buy a restaurant debt free. Today, it's probably the best day in decades to buy a restaurant, would be my view.
About Canada, I was curious about, of course, we have the platform, Mingle, some areas that we've seen at Collision last year and at Web Summit. Nothing new this year in terms of platform?
There are lots of new features, lots of improvements. For us, most of the improvements should almost be imperceptible. But I mean, we spent a year working as hard as we can. There's more than kind of 50 people across the various kind of engineering, product, and design teams. So it should be much more stable. There are some additional features across the mobile app, allowing you to have a kind of a richer video experience. We still, for the most part, for Mingle, push people to only do it on web and on their computer. And the reason for that is it ends up being a more professional interaction. Whereas if people are on their phone and that's how they can network, you know, people will be kind of out and about. So we've still limited or removed certain functionality from the mobile device. Yeah, people will get to see next week. I think it's hopefully people will be positive about the experience.
Of course, yeah. I was at the first Collision and Web Summit, and it in fact is a good experience in terms of what online can give us. But for example, getting more into a business more part of it, Canada is happy with the online experience, for example, for what they can take from it, the exposure they have abroad. And even Portugal, do you think Portugal was happy with the experience at Web Summit, even remote?
You know, it's a very good question. My argument has always been, firstly, that you cannot compete with real world events. They're so much better than online events. In the absence of being able to meet in the real world, doing something online is far better, much better than doing nothing. The second thing is well, what's the effect? What was the effect of doing Web Summit online? You know, the most important effect, I think, for the long-term brand of Web Summit was Web Summit became more global than ever before, because people who previously had heard of Web Summit, had thought about participating, but had never made the commitment to buy a ticket, pay for a plane ticket, organize their hotel, and come all the way to Portugal from the other side of the world, had never engaged with Web Summit, because they only had one option. They either do that or they don't participate in Web Summit at all. And so what happened in Web Summit in 2020 in December was it was far and away the most globalized event ever. We had far more participation from Asia, from South America, even from North America than ever before. And so the brand of Web Summit, its identity, the extent to which people know what it is and know that in a normal year it takes place in Lisbon, has expanded, I would argue, exponentially. And I think that has a huge long-term impact on the event taking place in Lisbon going forward. So I think, you know, that's one of the upsides. But I'm not going to argue for one moment that a online event is as beneficial as an offline event. I think an offline event has a level of magic that's irreplaceable online.
Of course, but in terms of feedback of talks that you had with governments, Canada, Portugal, do you feel that they took a lot from the event in terms of awareness of people?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the feedback we got. So I think there's two components to it. The first component is both governments, Canada and Portugal, at different levels had already participated over the course of 2020 in many online events, and their experience compared to, let's take Web Summit. Web Summit to them was incredible compared to the experiences of many other events. And that's because of the limiting factor of the software available to most other events. We build our own software, and that gives us the freedom to just really like create a much more compelling event. Whereas when you're using third-party software, there are a lot of limiting factors. And I think that reduces the effectiveness of online events. And for good reason, a lot of people are often quite dissatisfied with online events. The upside for Web Summit is it makes Web Summit look very, very good. So relatively speaking, comparing online events with online events, you know, the feedback was quite incredible. The specific upside for a lot of stakeholders working for government agencies was that ultimately, they have objectives, depending on the agency you're working for. It could be for inward investment. And a key metric is going to be, well, how many meetings did you have, you know, with potential foreign direct investors into Portugal? In a world where you don't have to walk a kilometer across Phil, make your way through thousands, tens of thousands of people, find a table to sit at, you can meet a lot more people. So for many of the, you have to remember there are two levels of government attendee at Web Summit. There is the government attendee who's there to kind of speak and say their piece. And then there's the, you could call them the worker bees. And those are the public servants or civil servants whose job it is to actually, you know, do all the meetings, progress relationships. And so the number of meetings that a number of the agencies we interact with and the people that work for them was far, far greater online. And it raises interesting questions about, as Web Summit returns to offline in Lisbon in November, in the weeks ahead of Web Summit, what can we do to facilitate hundreds, if not thousands of meetings between foreign delegates that are going to be in Lisbon and the relevant kind of Portuguese authorities? I think the great upside of all the software that we've built is that we will be able to empower not just the public sector, but the private sector in Portugal to do a lot more networking before, in a very efficient way, before everybody arrives into Lisbon. Because I think one of the great challenges is when you only have 3 days and your inbox is probably destroyed in the week before Web Summit and during Web Summit, you've only got 3 days. So your time is very, very finite and you're making decisions. I'll meet this person, I'll meet that person. And each person you meet, you'll probably spend half an hour with them, but that's half an hour you could have spent with somebody else. Well, what if you could spend 3 minutes over video the week before Web Summit or 2 weeks before Web Summit, just with all the startups in Portugal going, I've never met you guys before. I want to kind of hear your quick pitch. And you know, then I'll figure out if I've got time during Web Summit, because there's going to be 100 new startups. It would be really efficient if you could meet literally all of them over 3 hours.
That's very, very interesting, because I heard you talk about it at Clubhouse a few weeks ago, precisely about it. Yep. So I think the way you see Web Summit for this next year is trying to enjoy the online experience before and probably after Web Summit, to prepare better, to go to where you need to go at the event, at the 3 days. So the online platform can be available probably before Web Summit for this preparation, for this better quality at the event, really. That's it, right?
I mean, that's my strong feeling. It makes everything much more efficient, because, you know, time is limited. And when you talk to the public servants that say handle foreign direct investment, they only have so much time. And it is incredible. It's sixth sense. Okay, does this fit with what we're trying to achieve or not? And as a journalist, it's exactly the same. You know, there are going to be some really incredible Portuguese startups you've never heard about. You've got to do half an hour with 50 of those companies to just find the two or three stories that are really compelling. That's just time you don't have. So I really think the software is going to have immense benefits to the normal Web Summit, which will take place in November.
In terms of the event, nothing that you saw until today seems that the offline event won't happen. The amount of people there is probably the thing that you are focusing more on now, right? 70,000 people couldn't be possible. We don't know yet.
Well, yeah, we don't know. I think Mobile World Congress is happening in Barcelona in June, and
A lot of dropouts from there. A lot of companies.
And I think that's going to provide, very honest. I think maybe August would probably be better, but they're doing it in June. And obviously all of the right people have had a look and they felt, you know, to a point that it's okay. I think Israel provides the best example. So conference centers are open in Israel and the capacity is 75%. Those capacity limits are going to be lifted from my understanding in the coming weeks back to total normality. The only requirement is that you're vaccinated. Now in Europe, there's been a lot of discussion about vaccine passports. I don't know where we are. I mean, it's April. November is, you know, feels like a century away at the kind of the rate of change that will happen between now and November. Will there be vaccine passports in Europe? I mean, that's not, it's not something I can answer. There's a lot of politicians who say they're on the way, but whether they really will be on the way or not, I'm not entirely sure.
Because of it, the plan can change given the circumstances. And of course, you are talking about this with the Portuguese government, because of the contract. The Portuguese government has the last word in terms of how the event, in terms of people, really, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot can change. The fact that it's sometimes very hard to see, you know, we've been in lockdown for so long, and then I'm on Instagram and I follow lots of Israeli founders and I see them posting videos from a month ago in nightclubs in Tel Aviv, and I go, wow, I forget it's possibly not that far away. I mean, unfortunately, the vaccine rollout in Europe has been a little bit slower, but
a lot slower.
It does seem to be increasing all the time, and thankfully I think in most of Europe now the most at risk have been vaccinated, so I think the worst is certainly behind us. But you know, I think we could talk about this now, and then in 4 weeks' time, things could just be
all change,
completely different.
Absolutely. I'm interested also talking about a little bit of future of events. We talk a little bit about it, of course. Offline events are the biggest thing, the serendipity, getting people in touch with each other, even in terms of psychological things. You can get more from people when you are in contact with them in some circumstances. Where do you see the online, offline going, given that you are also an investor on the platform Hopin, that is one of the biggest platforms online? Where do you see the future events going?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I think Hopin has an immense opportunity to become an everyday collaboration platform, in particular for companies of all different sizes. I would hope that a lot of the software that has been built will enrich real world conferences. That's at least my hope. I mean, our thesis for effectively a decade has been, you can make conferences better using software, even just small amounts of software. But a lot of events these days, or at least before the pandemic, were software light, or there was literally no software. You just showed up with your ticket, and that was that.
That's in the basis of Web Summit, right? Trying to put software at the experience at events, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, we build a lot of software that just we use to try and make the events better, and then we build some software that attendees and speakers use as well. And overall, it seems to make a big difference. So what's happened with Web Summit is, during the pandemic, we started to reach out to the biggest event organizers in the world, partially because when we started looking at people attending Web Summit, we noticed that many of the biggest event organizers, from music, from sport, from business conferences, had been attending Web Summit, not as speakers, but I think to take notes. Mm-hmm. And we turned around to everybody and we said, look, you know, we think, you know, we're not going to say we're the industry leader, but we think we're doing interesting things, and we'd love to kind of convene an industry gathering if people would be interested and discuss events. One of the most important gatherings for people organizing events. And hopefully this November in Lisbon, the first time we'll convene event organizers from all over the world in Lisbon to discuss the future of events. And maybe some of those big event organizers will consider moving you know, their events to Lisbon. You know, I think Phil and Altis are great, but
by the way, you have good vibes in terms of the getting bigger project. There's no indications that it won't be ready until next year, 2 years.
I think so. Says. So we've no indications yet. But you know, I think, you know, we'll find out when the public finds out as well, whatever the progress is. But I do think, if you think about Seville or Bilbao, these are, I would argue, more minor cities within Iberia, and they have venues 10 times the size. And those venues are very often constantly filled with events from around the world. And the value of business tourism, you know, I think one of the big challenges in many European countries is over tourism. So if you're to focus on one type of tourism, broadly everybody's in agreement, you want tourists. For every tourist that comes in, you want them to spend, you know, more money. If you've lots mm-hmm. of tourists that spend almost no money, that creates all sorts of other challenges for cities or municipalities. And when it comes to conferences, the average conference tourist tends to spend about five times as much as the average private person traveling. They're using the business credit card, et cetera. Right. So it's one of the reasons a lot of cities have, as they've reached almost saturation with tourism, they've kind of asked themselves, look, we can't keep having more tourists to infinity. There is this kind of limit you begin to reach before the city's infrastructure begins to really feel the strain and citizens begin to become a little bit pissed off. So focusing on higher value tourism becomes a major strategy. And I think for Lisbon, it's quite similar to a number of other European cities. It's very, very popular, huge amounts of tourists, and anything that can be done that I think increases tourists that come to the city who spend, a lot of money, the better. I'll give my own case. The example of Dublin, the tourist board in Ireland and the city of Dublin has made a big effort to increase the number of routes directly from China for the sole purpose of attracting tourists who tend to spend huge amounts of money when they come to Dublin.
And now no disrespect to
German tourists, but they like to come, but they don't like to spend. So
we in Lisbon we had also that problem. Of course, a lot of tourists, not the quality. Sometimes the spending isn't that high. Of course, the pandemic can be a reboot of people thinking about what they want in the future. But I was curious also about what you think about AR, especially AR, because 1 year ago it was a flop, but now there's more talk about it. Even Apple is trying to getting on board with the AR experience. Do you think even conferences can have some AR moment, probably?
Oh, yeah, sure. People have been trying this for years. Half a decade ago, Apple was buying some really interesting companies in this space. So Apple has invested heavily, and it's just going to take, maybe it is Apple. When the iPhone came out, there was no breakthrough technology in it. Mm-hmm. It was just that Apple had the genius of putting together all these other pieces of technology in a compelling way that created effectively a new category. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're very, that's what they're very good at. And were they the first smartwatch? They weren't the first smartwatch either, but they were just very good at the execution of already existing technology.
And now they have the most sold watch in the world. Not smartwatch, watch. Yeah.
And people were so dismissive of it at the start. It's just a monstrous platform now. They were dismissive of these as well. I mean, the reviews initially for these were totally terrible. But I think those types of they're just gone. They're almost gone as a category. It's just like, why would you? I don't own those types. I don't. What are they called? Cord? I don't know.
Exactly.
They're just
once
not
you
good.
Go wireless, you don't can ever go back. Yeah.
Exactly. So when it comes to AR, I think it will take Apple's genius possibly to give us a product up on top of which the creative minds of the world get to work on great applications, like for conferences or for tourism or just for navigation or for sports or whatever the case may be. So here's hoping in 2022, maybe Apple will come out with something compelling, but they are beginning to put into their latest phones. They're beginning to put in some of the, it looks to me like they're moving in that direction. They've got is it LiDAR or something?
Last week, Tim Cook acknowledged that the AR is the next big thing for Apple. And he talked about products. So probably there are products coming this summer, I think. I'm interested in terms of Web Summit. You have a lot of ideas in December. We talked about getting the most of the nights, getting more events with more hours of people talking, of good speakers that are everyone wants to hear, talking a little bit more hours at night. Does that plan still pans out in terms of
December? So for November, a dream for me is, if you think about any of the speakers at Web Summit, let's say there's 1,000 speakers, all of those speakers have super fans, people who will sit and just would love to have a glass of wine in a very small venue, maybe even just 20 people, and listen for 2 hours and then do a Q&A. And there are particular speakers at Web Summit. So say, for example, Jimmy Wales, who created Wikipedia. I guarantee you, just within Lisbon, there are Wikipedians who would, I don't know what the phrase is, they would eat their own arm to get to spend 2 or 3 hours with Jimmy Wales, and just there'd be a moderator, you could be moderating, and the discussion would be...
I have to say this, sorry.
Yeah.
Next week I will be interviewing Jimmy Wales at this podcast. So
Oh,
exactly.
no way.
Actually,
That's unbelievable.
I booked 2 months
That
ago because Wikipedia makes 20 years this year.
Wow.
And
Wow.
I
Wow.
will be interviewing him. So just a plug in there.
Yes. So I think he's, you will find these absolute super fans who, you know, they're so interested in Web Summit in general. You know, it's an interesting experience with Jimmy Wales, where there's a moderator recording the discussion and hosting the discussion. And you can say the same for Matt Mullenweg, who created WordPress, and so many other people. And I would love to create these type of like super fan experiences where people who are really passionate about it could be design. Because at Web Summit, there are people who are there who are genuinely the absolute heroes or idols of a portion of the attendees. And I think 20 minutes on stage is fine for most people, don't get me wrong, but for some people, they could listen literally for hours. You know,
Absolutely.
some of the journalists, we bring some of the most famous, you know, investigative journalists, war reporters, they've been doing it for 50 years, and you're like, these people are just unbelievable. I want to sit in a restaurant. I want to listen to them for 4 hours. And
Exactly.
as well, that you know, person who might have run the newsroom in the New York Times is also interested in being surrounded by other people who are passionate for 2 hours to talk about the
Absolutely.
future of newsrooms or reporting or whatever the case may be. So
I
hopefully
love
we can get
that
you
idea.
to lead one of the,
I'm convinced, absolutely. I was also curious about the new company I believe you are trying to build in terms of licensing the events part, the licensing events part. Where does this going? I heard at Clubhouse that you are probably trying to hire 50 people to this area. It's a new company, has a name already.
It has an it well it has a kind of like, you know, what would you call it, like a secret project name. The name is Summit Engine. I mean, that's just, I mean, that may or may not be the name. We'll decide that at a later date. I sort of think we're maybe a little bit, we're not building hardware, but I'd like to say in some ways they make some may make something, they test it. Car companies can sometimes be like this as well. And so in our case, we have a primary business running events using our own software, and they are very successful. And as we begin to build software for everybody else, and by the way, every organization organizes events at some scale, and then there are pure event organizers as well. And as we begin to build software for that world, which is a huge world, we're not in a particular rush. We're not reliant on just getting, we have to get as many customers as fast as possible. I look to companies like almost like Porsche, where they're happy to actually focus on building the best cars in the world. And eventually maybe they'll have a kind of an everyday car that you know, somebody can buy at almost a reasonable price. They're still quite expensive.
So you are refusing
And
some people that want some companies that want your
oh
events
yeah.
licensing.
No,
Yeah, a lot of more.
we've got an absolutely gigantic waiting list. And
But
we're
with
just kind of picking and choosing.
The UN was already happen or already
Yeah,
happened. How
the
does
UN,
the went?
it went great. I mean, again, part of it being great for them, I think, is they had a quite poor experience using other people's software. And then working with our team and using our software, that, you know, they had a really good experience. And in working with them, we've learned an awful lot, and we've got lots of ideas for to how to make the software even better and even better. And I think 2022 through to kind of 2025 is our roadmap to begin to open up this software to more and more people. But in the short term, it's you know, it's almost like it is like Porsche in a way, that you see pictures of the car and you hear about people test driving it and there's sneak glimpses of the new Porsche Taycan in Portugal, and this famous driver is driving it around Lisbon, and but nobody else is allowed to drive it, and that's sort of the progress that we'll make. And eventually, maybe by 2025, anybody can use certain versions of our software. A good example would be Pixar. Pixar build their own software to create what they want to create, animated movies. We build software as well, but to create conferences. And there's a couple of versions of Pixar software that's available to the public. They now have, you know, almost 30 plus years later, they have something called, you can get a license to use a very basic version of RenderMan, some of their software. So if you're producing a little animated movie, you can kind of use their software. It doesn't really cost very much. You don't interact with Pixar. But if you're a big Hollywood studio and you want their, you know,
premium,
you want to create a blockbuster movie with amazing special effects, then okay, that's a totally different kind of product. It's not, you don't just log on to a website, give the credit card, and you have everything. So we're working our way down to an everyday consumer product, but that, you know, don't expect that before 2025. So we work on long timelines.
But in terms of new customers that you want to try to check the software, there's new ones in the horizon right now?
You cannot
announce who are.
No,
they,
I can't announce them yet. And I think one of the things we're in the process of doing, we've never added an external board member. And in the coming period, we'll kind of announce the first external board member to join Web Summit. And hopefully they'll be one of the most experienced people in the world running and building a company selling essentially software related to events. So
more tech company than before.
But
I was curious about the separation. Will you separate this area in another company, right?
It's a good question. I think like Porsche or Amazon or Pixar, the extent of the separation, there is a degree of separation already, and that's existed increasingly over the last year or so. For a long time, the engineering team built products entirely aligned to our cycle of events. Increasingly, our engineers are agnostic of what's happening in the rest of the business. They're just building software, and it doesn't matter if there's an event next week or in 6 months' time. So there won't be a total separation, but there'll be a little bit of a separation.
I was also curious about investment. Hopin was a great investment, of course. Skyrocketed in terms of valuation in 1 year. So incredible. Amarantine, I think this is the name of your investment area. What type of investments do you have more on that? What hopes do you put in those investments, really?
Sorry, let me just jump in. Sorry, Jean, we're running really out of time. So if we can wrap it up.
I have to go as well. 7 minutes ago, I think.
Last
question. So let's go.
So Amarantine, we were very fortunate to invest in Hopin. It is the fastest growing European software company ever, maybe the fastest growing software company ever in terms of valuation. I mean, whenever you invest in something, if you invested a euro, and then 12 months later, somebody said, oh, you've made 100x return. I mean, that's sort of like, you know, that doesn't make sense to anybody, you know. So it doesn't really happen. So, there's no pattern there. That is an anomaly. In terms of what we look for, we invest in early stage companies. And I think traditional investors, oftentimes they want business plans, they want spreadsheets, they want projected revenues. In our case, we're literally just backing people. Are these people that, you know, that we like? Broadly, their vision is compelling, but also do we believe these are people that when faced with adversity are going to, if possible, overcome it. And early stage investing, you're making bets on people. And that's kind of, That's broadly what we do. We bet on people, and not, you know, I and hopefully in time, the ideas become very compelling businesses like Standard Cognition or Hopin, et cetera. Mm.
Good investments. One last question. If we have to invite one person for our podcast in the future to talk about the future of technology and how it's changing the world, who would you say we should invite?
I'll do the Irish thing. I'll say Patrick Collison from Stripe. You know, I think he's particularly, you know, he's particularly brilliant.
Had a great year, really.
Yeah, I'll tell you who I think is very amazing. Mariana Mazzucato, who's an economics professor. She's Italian. She's based in University of Sussex and LSE in the UK. She is the world's, I think, expert on what drives innovation at a macro scale. And she's very much in favor of state investment in education and R&D, because I think what the private sector is great at is commercialization, but the private sector doesn't do innovation all that well. And we were talking about Apple. What Apple do better than anybody else is taking innovation that has already occurred and figuring out actually how to make a commercial success out of it. So exactly. If you took the iPhone that launched in 2007, 2008, and you looked at it, something like the 20 core components of an iPhone, zero came from the private sector. None of those innovations emerged from a privately funded research endeavor. It all came out of crazy long-term tinkering inside universities or publicly funded research laboratories. And then eventually it takes the genius of Apple to go, okay, this sort of thing that's been demoed on all these stages is this amazing capacitive touch technology. Here's how we're going to actually make this work. And it's going to be a success. And Mariana Mazzucato is all about the fact that we shouldn't forget that from the internet to almost everything in our computers, it's all come out of the state sector, because the state is prepared to back things on a 20-year timeline, whereas as an investor, I'm looking for a return on a much shorter timeline. So that's
of course
that's it.
Makes
thank you so much.
Sense. This
thank
always so happens much. With us. We always end up speaking too much.
Yeah.
But
sorry about
need,
that.
We need to go.
I can't wait to get back to Portugal. Talk to you soon. I got to jump on a call. Bye.
Okay. Bye. Bye. Pronto, está feita a conversa. Vamos pôr, desde já, aqui um excerto que achamos curioso, um pouco mais filosófico, de Paddy Cosgrave a responder uma pergunta que lhe fizemos em dezembro.
I think we're almost done. Let me do a provocation to you. It's a tech provocation. It's a philosophical provocation.
Yeah.
Are we living in a simulation? Think about these concepts at some time.
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, we don't know. Maybe we just don't know. We don't really know the nature of reality. These are deep philosophical questions that David Hume, Scottish Enlightenment philosopher, grappled with. Elon Musk has talked about. We could be living in a simulation. We just don't know. I mean, there could just be many parallel universes where there are many web summits occurring. We just don't know. Maybe one day we'll find out.
Should we find out?
Oh yeah, sure. It's the nature of science. We should remain forever curious about, you know, the nth degree of the universe.
But there are some things that doesn't change what we do in our lives.
Yeah, but that doesn't. I don't think that reduces the natural inquisitiveness that people have to discover absolutely everything about the world. There should be no limits on what we can inquire about.
E então, para conseguirem bilhetes para o Collision, o evento que pertence à Web Summit sobre inovação, que vai ter pessoas como David Beckham, Nicole Kidman, um dos fundadores do Twitter, uma das principais responsáveis do Facebook, enfim, vai ter uma série de oradores interessantes, devem enviar um e-mail para mim. O meu e-mail é joao.tomé, sem acentos, @dinheirovivo.pt. Devem colocar o vosso e-mail e o vosso nome. E no assunto devem colocar bilhetes Collision, e assim as primeiras pessoas que enviarem vão receber então um bilhete para o Collision de forma remota, portanto o Collision online. E pronto, está feita a entrevista da semana, desta semana. Vamos ter também nas próximas horas um episódio em que vamos fazer o resumo da semana tecnológica com alguém que é um verdadeiro especialista em inovação e empreendedorismo em Portugal, que é o Ricardo Maravão, da BetaI. É uma pessoa muito interessante, de facto. vamos fazer com ele o resumo da semana tecnológica. Na próxima semana vamos alterar aqui um bocadinho os processos do podcast. Vamos colocar pela primeira vez, vamos começar a tentar colocar o episódio de entrevista que temos à terça-feira, esse é o objetivo, e depois o resumo da semana tecnológica à sexta-feira. Vamos começar a dividir aqui o podcast. De qualquer das formas, se tiverem sugestões até de alteração de colocação de podcast, podem enviar as sugestões para o meu Twitter. Estou em @emote. Já sabem, este podcast foi criado por mim, João Tomé, e é editado por Luís Stoffel. Se gostou do que ouviu, siga-nos nas principais plataformas. Até ao próximo episódio de Made in Tech, do Dinheiro Vivo.